Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. One of the things that J.R.R. Tolkien does so well in his stories is that he relies on the fundamental things about being human that we are most scared of. The things that bother us the most. And sure, there's a dragon at the end of the story. There's a war. But how often in your own life do you go to war? Do you confront a dragon or something that feels like a dragon? Most days, you confront other things. Inconveniences, uncomfortableness, and other more mundane things. Can you think of a day where you did not feel hungry at some point? Maybe you woke up in the morning and thought, wow, I could really go for some breakfast. Or maybe you worked a little bit longer in the day, and by the time dinner came around, you were really ready to eat. Now, of course, I'm not talking about real hunger. I'm not talking about starvation. I'm not talking about the kinds of things that the dwarves and Bilbo would feel on their journey as they're running out of food in their packs or water. I'm talking about the things that we can relate to. We have been hungry, and most days you feel hungry. How many times have you, especially in your childhood, gone to bed and noticed how uncomfortable the dark is? Most nights, maybe? These are all things that we all experience. These are all things that play to our deeply seated subconscious fears. Scientists will tell you that the reason why we fear the dark is because of evolutionary benefit. Children who were afraid of the dark did not wander off into the dark and get eaten by predators. They stayed with their family or with their community. The uncomfortableness of hunger drove people to take action to feed themselves. These are bare minimum requirements for survival. Safety, food, basic drives. And yet, in the context of what we're going to read today, these uncomfortable impulses that guide us to survival also remind us exactly how much we are in danger. So come with me as we start Chapter 8, Flies and Spiders. And before we get into it, just take a look at the title of the chapter. It's so simple, and yet it conveys so much. Flies and Spiders. Not spiders and flies. The flies are the party. They're the first-person perspective. And of course, flies are eaten by spiders, and the party is walking directly into a place with a lot of spiders, which we'll get to not exactly in this episode. We come across some cobwebs and things. But the other thing is that flies are drawn to light. And Tolkien will remind us many times in this chapter of the light that these little flies would rather be going to and how they have to continue marching through the dark. Writers will often say that the very most important line of any book is the very first line, and the next most important line is the last. Just like a comedian's set on stage, you have to start with your strongest joke, you end with your second strongest joke, and all the other jokes in between kind of fill the rest of the set. And of course, you want them to be good, but those are the two most important. And I think you could probably say the same thing about a chapter in a book. The very first line in chapter 8, Flies and Spiders, is, "They walked in single file." This line is noticeably short for the way Tolkien writes his sentences. Many of his sentences, as we've discussed on many occasions, are very long. They're multi-layered. They are complex, compound sentences. But this one stands apart. They walked in single file. They don't ever walk single file. This is telling us so much in just one sentence at the beginning. This is a situation that is uncomfortable. They are in a place where they have never been before. They don't even go two by two. It's not like they have a partner or a pairing to keep them feeling more safe. All they can see is the person in front of them as they march single file. Now, we get a description here about the very beginning of this tunnel through the trees, and it very much is a tunnel. Later on, we're going to talk about similarities to the goblin caves. But to start off, we get a sort of arch leading into a gloomy tunnel. Notice he uses tunnel here, made by two great trees that lean together. This is not something that happens naturally. Trees don't normally grow into each other. They tend to grow into the space that they have room to expand. This is an archway. This is an archway designed using nature. Who designs things in harmony with nature? The elves. This is an ancient archway. This is something that has denoted the beginning of this path, an elven path, and yet we're only given hints about this here, and the dwarves don't seem to take note of this. In fact, the things that they do notice are more about how decayed and scary the forest is. Too old and strangled with ivy and hung with lichen to bear more than a few blackened leaves. These old trees have seen much better days. And we're getting the first of many descriptions here that draw some very, very stark contrast to the situation they're about to go into. Blackened leaves. Black. We're going to see light and blackness, and the times that we see color are going to be very odd, because everything in this section of the story, this path that they're going down, is black for the most part, with tiny glimmers of light. In fact, this is contrasted in the very same paragraph. Soon the light at the gate was like a little bright hole far behind. A bright hole in contrast to the blackened leaves and the darkness that they're walking into. And then we get another little detail here about how the forest itself seems to be acting of its own accord. The trees leaned over them and listened. As they work their way through this tunnel, we get little details about how things are becoming dimmer and things are hard to see. And as they looked side to side, they can see a sort of darkened green glimmer. And I had to search glimmer. I had to look up why specifically glimmer. Turns out that glimmer has a number of different definitions. One is a faint or unsteady light, a gleam. Okay, a faint light in the distance, or a faint reflection or refraction of the lights that are barely making their way into the path. How about this one? A dim perception or inkling. That totally makes sense as well. You know, when you see something in the distance, but you're not quite sure what it is, you have a dim perception. And I love that they use in this definition inkling, like the Inklings, the group that Tolkien and Lewis were a part of, where they would share their stories and get together with their friends. But also, a faint manifestation or indication. All of these are very, very useful descriptions for glimmer, because as we know, further on in the story, some of the things they see will appear more like manifestations than actual real things. And all of that is contained simply here, a darkened green glimmer. Something feels odd and almost magical about this place. And then we get another slender beam of sun that slips through some of the leaves and is lucky enough to make its way to the ground. Now, is this lucky for the beam, or is this more lucky for the party? I'm going to side with the second. And then they meet their first animals in this darkened tunnel. Black squirrels. And I had to do some research around this as well. Are there black squirrels in nature? Do we have black squirrels in our own world? Well, turns out we do, but they don't occur as a specific species of squirrel. They do occur, however, among many species as a mutated version of squirrels that occur not very often, which implies that these blackened squirrels are not natural. This isn't just a type of natural creature that lives in the forest. These squirrels weren't always black. And the word mutation doesn't really show up in Tolkien's works, but we understand what that means. The genes have been changed from what they would have been before, much like dark magic might have caused the squirrels to change color. And if we go back to science, we have an evolutionary explanation as well, as the forest becomes darker and darker, and eventually pitch, as we will soon find out, having black fur would make you harder to see in the dark. So maybe this is a survival thing. Now, another thing you'll notice going through this chapter is that time seems to progress both very quickly. Tolkien does this thing where he condenses time, and this happens on occasion. And we've talked about this before. Sometimes he expands details and time seems to take forever. And other times, things move pretty quickly with very minimal amounts of details, just the most important bits here and there. And as this time moves on, we get little details about the things they're experiencing as they move forward for what appears to be an indefinite or almost eternal amount of time, because it seems like it's taking them forever. That's at least how they feel. And we kind of feel the same way because of this hodgepodge of descriptions without any real understanding of what day each of these things happen in. We have strange things happening, queer noises of grunts, scuffling, and hurryings in the undergrowth. And yet, they can't seem to determine what these things are. They come across cobwebs, dark, dense cobwebs with threads extraordinarily thick. And we get this foreshadowing about what exactly the spiders in the title might actually be talking about. And extraordinarily thick generally implies that these are not regularly sized spiders. And along with this foreshadowing about spiders later on in the chapter, we also get some other foreshadowing here. Although the spider webs were very, very common, they're up in the trees, they're in the low branches, they don't stretch across the path. And it's noted that the narrator here says, because maybe that's some sort of magic that keeps the path clear, or for some other reason they could not guess. The only two reasons, seemingly, would be that this path is regularly traveled and so therefore kept clear of any obstacles or spider webs. And as we all know in our world, sometimes it only takes one night for spider webs to come back. Spiders are very busy, especially at nighttime. So that doesn't seem to be the thing that's happening with this path. They're not coming across strangers. This doesn't seem like it's used very much at all. Magic might be the only other option, but what magic would leave the path open when the rest of the forest is so, well, unsettling and dangerous? It would have to be someone or someones. Is that even a word? Who is that? Grammar. Who have some manipulation still over the nature of the world around them, or at least are able to carve out an area of safety amongst the more dangerous part of the forest. They continue on, and there's a reference here about them hating the forest as heartily as they had hated the tunnels of the dragons, and yet having even less hope of this ever ending. We are reminded of, again, the situation that was most dire to them previously, and how this is somehow even worse. And we don't see goblins, we don't see orcs, we don't see monsters in the dark. We just have all of the sensations working against the party, the darkness, the hunger, the lack of wind, This is something I remember noting as a child when I read this, and how disturbing that part would feel. Sure, we all understand what it's like to be in the dark, or to feel like we're kind of on this never-ending push through something that's very difficult for us. But then the note here of they longed for the feel of the wind, and that there was this everlasting still that was dark and stuffy. There's something about that is super uncomfortable. Have you ever been in a car ride where it's been warm outside and yet the person driving the car does not lower the windows and they do not turn on the air conditioning? And you have that uncomfortable feeling that you're just breathing in the same air as everybody else in the car with you, and it's warm and it's still and it's stale. There's something about that is just horrible. And yet, not as terrible as facing a dragon, but yet still really uncomfortable. And it just lends to the overall gloom. And I have a hard time coming up with the right words here, because it's like 100 needles or 1,000 needles pricking you at the same time when you'd rather just be stabbed by a sword. It's all these little things that are really getting to them. And then we get descriptions about the night. At night, it becomes pitch dark. And the narrator says here, not what you call pitch dark, but really pitch. So I had to do some more research. Really pitch. I had an assumption here that they were talking about actual pitch, and it seems like they are. If you're not familiar with pitch, I mean, pitch, the word pitch can mean lots of different things, like throwing a baseball, but the word pitch also means a sticky, resinous black or dark brown substance that is semi-liquid when hot, hard when cold. It is obtained by distilling tar or petroleum and is used for waterproofing. Anybody who would have worked on wooden boats would have been familiar with pitch. It's a very dark material, almost wholly black, like the night looks to the dwarves and Bilbo.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Bilbo tried flapping his hand in front of his nose, is also in this little section, and he can't see it. And I think this is doing something that, well, makes sense here. It's describing that it's so dark you can't even see your hand in front of your face. But Tolkien could have said Bilbo couldn't see his hand in front of his face. Instead, he says he tried flapping his hand in front of his nose, which comes across a little bit comedic. But it's the only part that seems to at all have any comedy in it. The rest of this feels like it's straight out of a horror movie, which is interesting because when you think about the history of Peter Jackson before he did the Lord of the Rings films, he had previously done horror films. And there are elements of this in here, which is particularly interesting for it being pitched as a children's book. So Bilbo can't see anything in front of them, but yet we still know that they can see eyes in the darkness. This line is particularly interesting, and I had to do some more digging on definitions here. They took in turns to watch, and when it was Bilbo's turn, he would see gleams in the darkness round them. Gleams. Why the word gleams? Well, gleams can mean a faint or brief light, especially one reflected from something. What is reflecting light in a pitch dark area? It seems unnatural. And then on top of that, we get pairs of eyes with different colors, yellow or red or green. Green is the last one listed there. What does this remind us of? Gollum. And the narrator doesn't note this here. The narrator could, at this moment, have said Bilbo was reminded of his interactions with Gollum in the dark under the mountains. But instead, it just says yellow or red or green eyes would stare at him from a little distance and then slowly fade and disappear, or to slowly shine out again in another place. But those aren't the only eyes that we get, and these are even more Gollum-like, at least without the green description. There were horrible, pale, bulbous sorts of eyes. Insect eyes, he thought, not animal eyes, only they are much too big. Gollum's eyes were also described as bulbous, but also green. If Bilbo had PTSD from his experience with Gollum, these would be triggers, both of these things. And yet, we don't get a description as to exactly what they are. The assumption is that these are other critters or creatures, maybe spiders, maybe insects that are living in the dark, and yet they don't come close to the fire at all. You can't actually see their bodies. This whole paragraph is very interesting, so I'm going to read the whole thing here. It says, although it was not yet very cold, they tried lighting watch fires at night, but they soon gave up on that. It seemed to bring hundreds and hundreds of eyes all round them, though the creatures, whatever they were careful never to let their bodies show in the little flicker of the flames. Worse still, it brought thousands of dark gray and black moths, some nearly as big as your hand, flapping and whirring round their ears. They could not stand that, nor the huge bats, black as a top hat either. So they gave up fires and sat at night and dozed in the enormous, uncanny darkness. The creatures are all dark gray or black. There are moths. There are bats. They can at least recognize those things. But the hundreds and hundreds of eyes around them never get close enough to the fire to find out what exactly they are. I think we can probably assume certain things about this. They did see squirrels, so it could be squirrels. It could also be spiders. We've seen spider webs. Maybe the spiders are already tracking them. Or what if some of these eyes, as we know about in other stories, belong to creatures that are spying on them? Not just watching them, not just normal creatures who are curious about who these travelers are or what this fire is in their regularly dark forest. What if these are spies from the Necromancer? We don't get a definitive answer here, but it is something that's interesting to think about. So as I said earlier, time doesn't seem to work quite correctly here, or at least they're so uncomfortable that they have a hard time with tracking the way things are going. It feels like they're going to be here forever. They're getting anxious. They knew that their food would not last. They decided, well, they need to eat something more than just what's in their packs because that food could run out. So they had a hard time catching a squirrel. And when they did roast it, it was terrible. So that lends more to the idea that these things were manipulated to be black rather than naturally evolved at just a different hair color. Then they were also very thirsty, but then were reminded that, well, there was the path that was eventually going to cross the river and that they shouldn't drink from the river, but there weren't any other water paths or streams or anything else here either. And when they get to the river, we're told that it also looks black, but they don't know for sure because it was so dark out. And we get a reminder here that this is what Bjorn warned them against, and so they were very careful about this, not wanting to even touch the water at all. We also get another hint here about who may have built this path and what was originally supposed to be here. There had been a bridge of wood across, but it had rotted and fallen, leaving only the broken posts near the bank. Clearly, this is not a path that was regularly used anymore, even if there was some sort of magical protection around, at least keeping the path free of spider webs. And then we get the whole situation with the boat. Bilbo looks across and he says, "There is a boat against the far bank. Now, why couldn't it have been on this side?" And in this case, they aren't particularly lucky here. How far do you think it is? Asked Thorin, who has had enough experience with Bilbo at this point to realize that his eyes are much better than most of theirs. And they have this conversation. Bilbo says, it's about 12 yards. Thorin's like, oh, it looks maybe like it's at least 30, but I can't see so good because I'm old. Basically, my eyes aren't what they were 100 years ago. But 12 yards is still way too far to jump. How are we going to get it? And then Bilbo comes up with a solution. And notice how this conversation is playing out. Thorin and the dwarves are being downers. They're Debbie Downers in this situation. I'm sure some of you are going to recognize that reference. But they're like, oh, it's too far. This is too hard. We're not going to be able to do it. And Bilbo's like, well, what if we just throw a rope across? Somebody has a rope, right? And they're like, yeah, but what if the boat is tied? And Bilbo's like, it doesn't look like, as far as I can see, it doesn't look like it's tied. But of course, it's kind of hard to see. And then they decide, okay, we'll give it a shot. And we get these little details. Dory is the strongest, but Fili is the youngest and still has the best sight among the dwarves. And then Fili comes up and tries to look across, and Fili stares for a moment and his eyes adjust, and eventually he's like, okay, I think I can see it. They take the rope, they add one of the hooks that they use on their packs to the rope, and after a few throws, they get it. But before that, it does splash in the water, and as a reminder to, I think, us as the reader, Fili is very careful with touching the wet rope, but it doesn't seem to do anything to him because he hasn't been submerged in the water, seemingly. And we get this very interesting line. I don't suppose the magic is strong enough to hurt you if you just touch a bit of wet rope, says Bilbo. They know that there's something wrong with the water and that it is magical in nature. And they're desperate in the situation. And so Fili picks up the rope again, touches a little bit of the water, but seems like he's okay, and then throws it on the wood on the other side. They drag it back. It seems to catch. And then it takes Fili and Killy and Owen or Oyen and Glowin or Glowin, depending on how you pronounce that. We had conversations about that in the bonus episode recently. And they all tug, and eventually it goes. They're able to break it away from the thing it was tied to because it actually was tied. Now, notice here, we were just told that Dory is the strongest among him, and yet Dory did not pull on the rope. We don't get an explanation for why that is, but you would imagine the strongest among you would want to help pull. And then the boat comes flying across the river, and we get this really cool little moment with Bilbo. Bilbo was on the lookout. He was the one that could see if the rope and the hook actually were pulling on the boat. So Bilbo was on the lookout, however, caught the rope and with a piece of stick fended off the little black boat as it came rushing across the stream. Help, he shouted, and Balin was just in time to seize the boat before it floated off down the current. Bilbo, among all of these dwarves, is the one who acts quickly. He decides what to do. He looks at the situation. He comes up with a plan. He solves it. And even at the end of the situation, when they are pulling on the boat and the boat comes flying at them, somehow he's able to react in time to stop the boat with a stick from clobbering him and maybe some of the dwarves. And then he responds fast enough for help because he can't quite reach it because he's a little guy. And Balin comes over and grabs the boat before it floats down the river. Bilbo is already showing signs of the very thing that Gandalf told the dwarves was the reason why he was there to begin with. Gandalf has traditionally been the problem solver. He's the one who gets them through or out of situations. And in the very first real test through this forest, Bilbo steps up. He solves the problem with the river. And to end this little section of the chapter with today's episode, we get this line. It was tied after all, he said, looking at the snapped painter that was still dangling from it. That was a good pull, my lads, and a good job that our rope was the stronger. So the plan right now for the bonus episode is to dive into a little bit more about Mirkwood. We're going to do a little bit of research, and I'm going to pick out something having to do with Mirkwood. I haven't recorded it yet, but we're going to pick out some more details about Mirkwood and get into the kind of background lore a little bit. So that's coming up for those of you who are patrons who sign up for the bonus episodes. And by the way, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast if you'd like to help out. And of course, you're all very welcome to sign up for free. But if you do sign up as a member, as a paying member, like Hannah or Ray E or Christy C or Hyperbole, welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for signing up. You can get ad-free episodes. You can get the bonus episodes. You can get t-shirts. There's all sorts of fun stuff over there. Plus, free members get updates and they'll know exactly what's going on if I have to take a week off or anything like that. Also, if you are a VIP patron, you get shout-outs every week, like AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azel Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Calicat, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huon Is My Hero, Jezzer, KDS, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Wow, I got through all of those. I actually did it this week. Maybe my talking and reading is getting better with lots of time, with years of doing podcasts. But thank you, everybody, for your support. If you want to help in other ways, one of the best ways you can do that is leaving 5-star reviews on whatever platform you listen to this on. You can also do that on Apple and leave a review, and I'll read it out on a future episode. We don't have any new ones in the U.S. right now because those are the only ones I can see. Yay! I wish I could. The app I was using doesn't do it anymore, and there's not really a way to do it. I guess I could use a VPN and log into every single country in the world to see if there's a new review, but I don't think I'm going to do that. So there you go. Thanks for hanging out with me again. I hope you're enjoying this. I'm happy to finally get into Mirkwood and explore this chapter under kind of a microscope. So I hope you're enjoying that. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, if somebody offers you to try Black Squirrel, maybe don't. It's probably not that great. Also, don't fall in strange magical rivers. All right, I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.